Hi, this is Iris Jackson, and this is Miracles Happen, Dreams Do Come True. And last week, we had the wonderful, fabulous German abstract artist Marlies Jermutis and the musician, writer, and web designer Rasa with us, and we just didn't, I felt like we just got warmed up. So welcome back, both of you.
Thank you, Iris. Nice to be with you.
Hi, Iris. Really good to be with you again.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to do this. Now, Marlies, as we were talking about last week, you have a new book that's coming out called My Life From Now to Now, The Spiritual Journey of a Housewife. And first of all, it's hard for me to think of you as a housewife.
I think Iris, the housewife has really a bad reputation. You know, we think of women who are housewives, they sit at home cleaning, feeding the kids and the husband, and that's it. But I think there is a lot more to this. For me, this is our whole environment, not only the house where we live, our neighborhood, taking care of the planet. This is all for me in that housewife. You know, it's really not only, I cook for both men and make a breakfast or whatsoever. Oh, no. It's a lot more, especially the spiritual aspect of it. It's very important. For me, I work with, Saint Germain. I work with my higher self with a lot of energy. You know, I really work with energy, light, you know. And I think this has all to do with being a housewife, you know, taking care of everything. Because we women have a lot of Shakti to give. And Shakti is always love, conscious love, really, compassion, understanding, really just the mother, what she is from nature. You know, this love, this giving, this birthing, and taking care of everything. You know, and so beside my being a housewife, taking care of my house, my family, my environment, my community, I'm an artist, I'm an abstract painter since 40 years now nearly, and I'm a musician, so I have a lot to do, and I do a lot, and mostly it is really energetically, you know, I make the brain illumination pretty much every day. This brings a lot of light in my brain, in my whole being, you know, then connecting to Saint Germain or different other ascended masters. And, that is all being a housewife, you know. So,
I should tell you
a little story. About a decade ago or so, Marlies came to America. And I was living in a small town in New England, and we've been friends for a long, long time, 40 years, I guess. We met when she first started painting, and I was a rock and roller living in Europe. And a decade ago, after we'd known each other for 30 years, she came to America. She came to my little apartment, and she assessed the energy in my apartment instantly, and she does this everywhere she goes. Sometimes people will notice that. Almost always she'll speak out, and you know Marlies, she'll speak out and speak her mind immediately. And she looked at my environment and saw immediately everything that was going on in my consciousness at that time. And I had been going through some emotional stress. I had been divorced some years before that. I was working hard, but really not thinking consciously about myself and where I was going and how I was evolving personally. And she came in, and the first thing that she noticed was that, yes, my apartment was pretty clean, almost clean enough, but my body was not. And I was really not exercising enough. I was overweight by, I think, really about 40 pounds. And she mentioned to a friend of ours that first night she was in America that, Raza is too fat. We have to change that. And she did. And in the manner of, I best describe it as a housewife in a way, even though I agree with Marlies, the term is not well received, but in the best manner of a conscious woman, she looked at me and she saw my diet, my habits during the day, my exercise or not, and she was staying with me for about 6 weeks at that point, and she cooked dinner every night and changed my lifestyle. And I tell you that within 2 months, I lost 40 pounds. And I credit her for that, my own effort, of course. But it was that guidance. And it was the kind of thing that, in part because of her training as a housewife early on in life, but also her experience as a woman who takes care of the home, not just cleaning the house, but everything that is the home. And we come home to our places where we live and we want to be ourselves in a comfortable environment, and that's really where we can be ourselves, but then we find out sometimes, unfortunately, what ourselves are when we're not so conscious of it. And I learned so much in that time period, not only losing weight, but sort of re-examining myself, and we re-examined our experiences together, and I learned a lot through that. But I don't know, this is just my poor attempt to try to explain a little bit my perspective of what she means by housewife in her book, and it's more than just cleaning the house, that's for sure.
Well, I know, and I feel like one of the purposes of having this title is that it will awaken a lot of women to the fact that they are so much more, and there are a lot of women that are not aware that they are so much more in that role.
Right, right. I think that is because when I see my life from now to now, it is really, you know, my life story, starting with the first day or the minute of my birth, and then going through the whole World War II, and then coming out there, getting married, coming out there, married, coming out there, looking always for something higher than just nice love and sexual attraction and whatsoever, you know, what we have here in our three-dimensional world. And after years and years looking and searching, what I even didn't know in that time, what I was searching for, you know. But later on, I realized it is really this divine love where we are all through connected. You know, this divine love, whole nature, everything is connected through divine love. And that is what I was searching for and what I really found, you know, to open that my heart became open. And through this opening of the heart, there came love out, spirit, consciousness, awareness, being self-aware of oneself. So, you know, all this, and then realizing, okay, this comes all out of the heart, this love and being self-aware, and we are all connected. But how we deal with that, how do I deal with that? I know that now, okay, so now I see somebody else who comes along and I think, oh my God, I really don't like to talk to that person. I really don't like that person so much. And there is the point where I turned around and thought, oh my God, that is first of all judgment. Second, that is in me. I don't even know if the person likes me or not, but when I think I don't like that person, how can I be in my heart and being an example for myself at first, to be this divine love, to be this love and give that out? And this is really like a training. you know, you think, you, I think I'm in love, you know, and then comes something along, and then it goes from the heart a level lower, you know, in the emotion, or higher up in the mind, you know, what explains an intellectual why I don't like whatsoever it is, you know. And so I think this is the main thing for me in transformation, and it was this transformation that I realized, okay, I'm connected to my heart, but I have to act from my heart and be this, be that love what we all, what all connects us. And yeah, that is what I see here around me, and I think everywhere, you know, that the people really getting more consciously, getting more aware what they like or not. They like peace and not war, or, you know, they like to communicate more with their neighbors and see, okay, we are all one. This kind of consciousness, this oneness, this one consciousness, this becomes more and more in our consciousness of whole humans, you know, of the whole planet. And, of course, there is this whole thing with the animals, you know. Okay, so if we like our animals, whoever they are, wild or not wild, then we have to think, okay, when we like and have compassion for the animals, so how is the practice of that? Not only thinking, like that and that, nice animal. We have to stop eating them. That means we have to stop killing them. And a lot of people think, I don't kill them. Yeah, they let
you them
kill.
What? You
well,
don't what?
You know, so this consciousness comes really more up that the people say, okay, I have to become a vegetarian. And now is the time even more becoming vegan that we don't have to store animals anymore for anything. You know, we are an abundant planet here, you know, especially here in America, where food is the first priority, you know, and it's so much food there. Even though when I came to America from Europe, I was so shocked, you know, to see in this rich country so many homeless people and so many what is it? People who come from war, like from Vietnam, the veterans, or whatever war they came from, they are standing in San Francisco on the corner on a traffic light and ask for a dollar. You know, this is pretty shocking for me. You know, so now it's, of course, the whole economy is down, blah, blah, you know, but it is really good, especially now, to focus on transformation, on light, on that we can change that all, that we can be compassionate with every soul on the planet, with every being, you know. We are all divine. And I think this is really a huge process now on the planet, everywhere. And we have that in all countries. You know, we are so connected, you know, in every country. If there is war or not, the people, they know this has to stop all, you know, and that planet finally comes to a kind of golden age, you know, where really a lot is possible. We are going in a different dimension, you know, and we can make then teleportation, telepathy, all this, you know, this will, I mean, we evolve more and more. We become more and more conscious, you know, of everything. And so this will come. We are in a wonderful, wonderful time, actually, because of the self-awareness of the consciousness, what we know by now. And it goes so wonderful through the whole planet, you know, wherever people sit, they can get pretty much all the information who are out there, you know, and this is wonderful too, that we get really, yeah, all the information what we want, at least in this, and can connect over the internet on that way, you know, when we see all the
things,
you know, wonderful.
Yeah.
And we are really,
Marlies,
more time.
Marlene, I'm sorry.
Yeah?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I have kind of an echo, so I'm a little confused sometimes. But I wanted to go back to the thing about stopping killing animals, because your friend and mine, the world-renowned animal communicator, says that when we stop killing animals, all war will stop.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All war. And your compassion, you know, I, like, for instance, with the deer.
Yeah.
I, you know, after I had met you and I saw the deer in the yard video and I shared it with some of my neighbors, I was outside one day and this guy had chased this doe from down the street, and he was throwing rocks at her. And the poor thing, she was just terrified. And I know, you know, for myself, I haven't treated the deer like you. I have sprayed my roses with garlic spray so they won't eat them all.
I think that is okay. That is a normal defense, you know, when you like roses and you don't want that the deer eat especially the roses, why you don't protect them a little bit? There's nothing against that, except you think, oh, yeah, I make a whole bed here of roses, and the deer, they can eat them every year when they come. That is, but otherwise, it's so nice to protect your nice roses and spray them with garlic.
Well, I've tried to make deals with them. You know, I've planted climbing roses all on the fence and made it clear that side was theirs and this side was mine. And but you know, I've started just using the Ho'oponopono instead of the garlic spray. Like when I see him, when I see him starting to eat my roses, I go out there and say, "I'm sorry, please forgive me. Thank you, I love you." And I just keep going closer to him, because I do love him. I do love him, and I just don't want. They really make an ugly mess with the roses. You know, they just eat them in this way that they kill them sometimes.
And, yeah, I know.
And so I want people to be aware of what you and Rasa and Bastian do with the deer, and also to see the deer in the yard videos. But you know what's so amazing to me is there's very few people that have made friends with wild animals. You know, St. Francis, and then I've known very few people. It really is a miracle. So I'd like to hear you share, you and Rasa share about that.
Hmm? Rasa?
Yeah. it's a wonderful experience, really. You're right. You know, and I think a lot about this question of eating animals or not, and I've been a vegetarian for a long time for a number of different reasons. At first, I think it was really, honestly, it was a little bit fashion. I moved into a commune and everyone was eating rice. Yeah, right. I was going to say vegetarian, but really they were, for a while when I got there, they were eating almost only rice. They were on a rice fast for about 2 weeks. And I entered the house right then. And so I had only rice for 2 weeks. That really cleans you out, that's for sure. But I've developed a taste for not eating meat, you could say. And this was years and years and years ago. Soon after that, I went to India and I was in Nepal, in a part of Kathmandu where ritually once a week they sacrifice a buffalo. And the Nepalese will eat some meat. And it's, you know, it's not like in America where people have this compulsion to eat meat 3 times a day. Every meal you have to, you know, bacon and for breakfast, hamburgers for lunch, and, you know, whatever you can get, chicken for dinner. Most of the rest of the world, they're not quite so frenetic about eating meat for every meal, and I think they're a lot healthier because of it. If you look at how fat we all are here, it's maybe a good indication that we eat a little too much, but also heart disease and all the other problems that come from eating meat. But when I got to India, I was eating no meat for several months before getting there, and then arriving in Kathmandu and staying in this part of town where I walked through the marketplace and came to a place where a butcher had a huge knife, and in one swoop he cut off the head of a buffalo. And for the rest of the day, the whole part of that part of Kathmandu was taking apart this buffalo and using every part of it. And that whole process began ritualistically, where they were sacrificing the buffalo for the good of the community. And they thanked the buffalo, and they honored the buffalo, and then used absolutely every part. By the end of the day, nothing was left. You know, even where they were making utensils out of buffalo bones. And that struck me so deeply, and I actually had a buffalo burger at one point after that, and I have to say that was the last red meat I ever ate in my life, was that buffalo burger many, many, many decades ago. And, you know, it was interesting, I have to say, and I had been a meat eater pretty much up until just before that point. But when we started having this relationship with the deer, we started getting emails and comments on our website from people all over the world, and a lot of hunters were writing to us. And I wrote a bit of a wrap, a bit of our philosophy about our connection to the deer, and in that, I purposely said that I had nothing against hunters specifically. I didn't really like the idea of people hunting for sport, and it really kind of creeped me out to see deer antlers and deer heads mounted on someone's wall as a trophy. But aside from that, I understood that people had been hunting and eating deer for as long as people and deer had been around. And so I had nothing against that. I only wished that people had the same respect towards hunting that I presume the Native Americans had in their hunting of deer. And I think because I added those couple of phrases about not being so against hunters that I couldn't see that point of view, almost every letter we got from hunters, people praised us for just having that perspective. And they didn't feel defensive. And they immediately would read the rest of what I wrote, which was how much eating excessive amounts of meat was damaging in so many ways to our environment. And if you would read, I think his name is John Robbins, the heir to the Baskin and Robbins fortune, who became a vegetarian and is very outspoken against eating meat and talks about environmentally how raising so
and
many
dairy.
Cows, you know, how the water is being taken away, how, you know, the ground is being polluted, all these things. I mean, people should look into that. It's really astounding. I think if you read one of his books, you'll stop eating meat immediately just from what the information that he uncovered. But what I realized is that people were writing to us and reading the rest of what we wrote, if only because I was a little bit open-minded about that. But what really amazed me was one Native American elder from a tribe in the East Coast who wrote and said, thank you for your words on hunting. And he said that he was just that day taking his 7-year-old son out for their first hunt, and his son's first experience hunting, and that they were going out to hunt a deer, and they were planning on killing one deer and bringing it back home. The way he expressed that really just opened me up to that whole experience that I had never had myself. I had never been interested in hunting. And I think it was just a little bit of an open-mindedness on my part that led me to write those words on the website. But the outpouring of understanding from hunters just astounded me. I always had a rather poor impression of hunters. That the idea of people with gun racks in their cars looking for any opportunity to kill something living, still sits in my mind, and that's sort of an American icon, unfortunately. But so many hunters wrote to me and said, we only hunt for food. And, you know, we agree with you entirely that hunting for sport is not a good idea, that most of the hunters were writing and saying that the main thing that we get out of going out in the woods is the joy of being in the woods and the pleasure of being in nature. I mean, it was really astounding to me to see that. And that I think that if we can be a little open-minded about this whole process of who our neighbors are and how maybe their belief system is entirely different from what you may believe, that that communication starts there. And I know a lot of hunters who wrote and said, yeah, I will never eat at a fast food restaurant because that food is so horrible. And you're right, the whole process of mass producing meat for our consumption is terrible for our health as well as the environment. I was amazed how many people really got that and how many people who I never would suspect would have that kind of awareness of that aspect of environmentalism. But we
I wanted to go back to the part, and again, I don't mean to interrupt you. I have an echo here, and I have a break in what you're saying, and then you say something else, so I'm a little confused here. But I want to go back to the part about eating meat and being in the habit of eating meat, because I came from a real meat and potatoes family. And when I was a little kid, they made me eat meat, and I would sit there for hours. I'd have like a little piece of roast beef, and I'd cut it up in a million pieces and pretend it was bacon for my dollhouse, and I would do everything but eat it. I mean, I had to sit hours. And so then later, when I was a teenager, I started to really like meat, and when my husband and I went out to dinner, I would always have a steak and potato and a salad. I would always have that. And I loved it. And then, one day we had these chickens, and we had gotten them as little baby chicks. And if you've ever had a couple little baby chicks, they are so precious and they follow you everywhere, and they're just so adorable. And we were sitting eating some Kentucky Fried Chicken, and I looked out the window and I said, oh my God, we're eating their friends. And I just stopped eating meat. That was it right there. And it was out of, like I heard somebody say one time, I don't eat anything that had a mother. And it's sort of, it's the loyalty to motherhood for me. I wouldn't want anyone killing my child and taking the leather and eating every part of it. So I get kind of tongue-tied when I talk about this, but what I noticed right away, Rasa, is that when I went out to dinner, I liked the salad, the bread, and the potato, and that was the things I really liked. I was just in the habit of eating the steak.
Right. So ingrained in us that we eat our meat. There's what's the expression, Marley?
It said, how can you get your pudding if you don't eat your meat?
Right.
Yep.
We grow up with that model, and it's very hard to break out of that. I mean, it's a little easier these days because there are some really delicious soybean and vegetable protein preparations that give you that same sensation of meat that we're kind of used to, that I think for many people makes you feel comfortable. But at the same time, when you stop eating meat, you really start to notice these differences pretty strongly.
Uh-huh.
There's a wonderful scene. Yeah, go ahead.
So I wanted to say this about the part about hunting too, is it's the part about being out in the woods, being out in nature, feeling all the plants, feeling all the aliveness and the wildness that is the real draw. It's just like, I really like the potatoes and the salad. You know, mm-hmm. and I think people need to start noticing that. My husband was a hunter when I met him 44 years ago, and he never killed anything after he met me.
Mm-hmm.
He never killed anything. He just noticed that a camera was good enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I just want to encourage people to really get in to your feelings, and a lot of these things are addictions. And I want to go back to what you were saying in the beginning, Marlise, is that people are looking for that inner connection, that divine love. And I think that's what so many addictions are, is not knowing how to find that, or not being able to be still long
mm-hmm.
enough to look inside. What do you say about that?
I think the being still, this is the biggest part for all of us, to just sit wherever you can sit, if it is in the bathtub or in nature or in the living room or on your meditation table. It really doesn't matter. When you just let go, connect yourself to everything, come in this oneness, in this heart, and be still. And I think for me, it is always, was a very good practice saying mantras with a mala. You know, 108 times the same mantra, because then when you do that, you know, you can see or think, you know, you become aware how our mind is counting the mantras or saying the mantra, and still we think about how's the weather outside, you know. So this brings really to come in stillness is not easy. It's really, but when we are there, you know, there is this really this oneness, this unbelievable calm vibration, you know. Actually, you feel everything, you see energy, you see aura, you know, all this, and that is really a problem for the most of the people, you know, to be still for even sometimes for 5 minutes, you know, just sitting still. I mean, I know that when I visit people, you know, and they are always talking. They have to talk all the time, you know. But I like to come with somebody together, you know, and talk a little bit, socializing, and then sit and be still, you know. Even for 10, 15 minutes, just, you know, or listening to music an hour, you know, just that the mind can calm and the body and, you know, and that brings us to oneness and to thinking, that stillness, that brings us to the realization that we are all one and all connected, that comes really through stillness. And so with the meat, actually, I want to say that again, it was when I became a vegetarian in 1970, that was really very difficult for me. I didn't grow up with a lot of meat because we didn't have that, but it was still very difficult. And so when I start becoming a vegetarian, so always when I went somewhere, you know, even in town, and I got that smell of fried whatever, you know, fried chicken or whatsoever, there came this longing up again, you know, oh, I would like to eat that. So one day, I remember that so clearly, I went with a friend to Amsterdam, and we went to a very fancy restaurant, and I wanted to eat. After months and months being vegetarian, I really had that longing for eating a wonderful steak. Okay, so the steak came, and I start to cut with a knife the steak, and I tell you, this whole horrible thing in my left arm where my fork was, you know, and I cutting, so it felt to me really that I cut in my own arm. That was it, you know. I didn't eat any of that meat, and never again. You know, that was for me a very strong experience, you know, this really opening up, you know, to cutting my own flesh in a way. You know, when I cut that steak, you know. And that, I think, this was a great experience for me, being vegetarian and, you know, after long, long years. And so, you know, I mean, I'm not so crazy when I had to survive somehow and I had to eat meat. Yes, of course, immediately. I would eat meat to survive, yes, you know. But we are not anymore in surviving. My God, especially in California or where we are all, you know, there is so much food, so much fruits and veggies. And like you said, I love potatoes, you know, potatoes and salad. Very simple, healthy and good, you know, and you can do that in all varieties, mashed potatoes, fried potatoes, whatsoever, cooked potatoes and, you know, all potatoes.
So, I love potatoes and they're so good for you.
Yeah, it is. You know,
so
I don't like after eating years and years rice, I don't even like rice anymore. You know, I came back to, in the Germans, they eat anyway lots of potatoes, you know. And so I really came back to the potatoes, you know. Sometimes I eat rice, but really I love potatoes. And so we really don't need, like Radha said, any more meat. You know, we have so much nutrition in lots of food. We know by now how much, what nutrition are in that and that, you know. So I think that is, and then when we do conscious evolution in our brain, then we stop. That means when we don't take only not pollution in, sondern taking not emotional pollution in. Emotional pollution is listening the whole day to television, listening to the horrible news, you know, and you get really excited. Listen to that guy, whoever it is, you know, their emotion.
Craig Reale.
No, no, you are not in there. No, it's really pollution what we take in our mind, you know, what we see the whole day and what we talk and, you know, so that is what Leonard Orr talks about, you know, this pollution, emotional pollution and what we eat and all that. That actually makes us old, you know, when we always worry and listen to negative news, whatever, if they come out of the TV or out of the neighborhood, it is a pollution and that makes us older and older. You know, that is a big...
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just thought it was a good time because you talked about the 108 mantras, and I just think it'd be good to bring up the violet flame again and the way you use it.
Oh, yeah. What I do in the morning, I sit on my puja table. I have around 18 candles for every master and goddess a candle, and I lit them every morning with an om. Say every time Om, lit the candle, and then I sit, and I connect myself to the highest source, to Father, Mother, Creator, and within me, to the I Am Presence, to my soul, and then through this connection, I invoke their highest divine energy through my Antahkarana, this tube of light, into my brain, and then through that to my sacred heart or my heart chakra. And this heart chakra opens up with this white divine light. And there comes out, you know, love, light, compassion, understanding, devotion, you know, all these qualities, peace and grace, you know. And this is all located in our heart chakra. And when we open that up, but I open that up, so I feel a kind of through that already, centeredness and wholeness. It's very easy, you know, just visualizing and thinking that, you know. And then after that, I make my brain illumination, what we can look up at Humanity in Unity. You know, they have the DVD what is for me very helpful in this light age now, working with light, bringing light to all the components of the brain and the whole body, cells, DNA, RNA, and all that. And then I connect myself to Jesus and Saint Germain. So Saint Germain has for us a program that I can download into my brain. This is a rejuvenation. The rejuvenation program from Saint Germain. That means I am the rejuvenation, you know. I'm downloading that into my brain, to my whole being. And then the ascension program, I am the resurrection and the life from Jesus. You know, so I give that in my whole being, in my cells, my DNA and all that. And then after that, you know, I invoke again the violet consuming flame from Saint Germain, really gratefully, that he provide us here on the planet with this wonderful consuming transformative flame, violet flame. And I, you know, I came to that point that I realized when I do that every day, or even shortly, you know, I don't have to sit a long time to do that, visualize the violet flame in me. And in a way, then, I am the bringer, I'm running around as a violet consuming flame in a way. You know what I mean? When I,
yes, I do.
Yeah, inside and outside, the violet flame around me in a radius from maybe 3 meters or two. What do you think, what kind of transformation is going on? You know, I mean, you have that too, Iris. When you tell me, you know, when you in your yard, you go out, everything is violet and that changed the neighborhood and all that. Yes, it does. We don't even have to think about it. It does it by itself. The flame does it by itself. That is that is her purpose, to be that, you know, transmuting and consuming everything that doesn't serve us today on that planet anymore. And I think when we do that a lot, all the people or a lot of people, we will change here, the violet. And we went, you know, lately I do that, yeah, very disciplined, the 108 time I'm the violet consuming flame in manifestation in action, that mantra. And Radha and I, we went to the beach in Maryland, to Ocean City. And I go there since 10 years, every year. And that is the first time that I found shells who have a violet pattern. I never in 10 years found any shells with a violet pattern. And I thought when I went along the beach with the first morning, I thought, oh, my God, all violet. This is a connection with Saint Germain, with the violet flame now. You know, that I found that wonderful violet, white violet shells, you know. So I see more violet around me, you know. I'm sure the violet shells were always there, only I didn't realize them. Or maybe they were not there, I don't care. But this time, through my very strong connection lately with Saint Germain and the violet flame, I found that wonderful shells, you know. And the paintings now, my in the last days, I painted on silk, mainly violet, especially violet background on silk, you know, pretty big painting, 30 by 25 or 45 by 30 inches. And this is all violet, you know, and it's just, this comes now out, you know, this is always this consciousness, you know, but brings it out, and so through the strong connection to the violet flame, you know, I always use violet in my paintings since years, but never so strong like now. And the theme calls actually America, because here in America I got that strong connection with the violet flame and Saint Germain, you know, because he is even. He was last in Europe, but still here in America is this huge field for Saint Germain and the violet consuming flame. And so, yeah.
Well,
so, yeah?
I'm I'm sorry. I just wanted you to say how people can reach you and Rasa at your various websites. I want them to see Deer in the Yard. I want them to see your art. I want them to hear your music. So tell people how they can reach you.
Iris, a good place to start is if your listeners go to bbsradio.com, bbsradio.com/miracles happen. Right now, there are two of these new violet paintings on your website from Marley's, plus all of our links. So Starseed Music, the Deer in the Yard pages, Marley's Starseed Gallery, and I'll give you a couple of those web pages, starseedgallery.net and starseedmusic.net. You can start with those two. I would go there, but also just to your web pages also. And you have to take a look at these two new paintings that are up on your website now, these violet paintings. Really amazing. You know, Marley's talks about this whole process of meditation and the violet flame and the mantra process itself. This is a practice, and for me it's a kind of paradox that we're using our minds to say mantras, to, you know, either internally or externally or chanting in any way. But for me it's a kind of paradox that what we're looking for is that space where there is nothing, out of which everything comes. Out of that space of nothing is all potential that the quantum physicists are finding out and describing to us in amazing ways these days. But what's amazing to me is watching Marley's painting, the actual art and act of painting itself is in itself a kind of meditation. And I've been amazed for years, ever since I've known her, to see that process of how she paints. And it really is a kind of meditation in itself, where she's letting go of her ego in order to allow just that higher self come in and take over in the painting process. You know, I see her before she's painting. She's assembling all of the materials in the studio. She's getting the paints together, the silk in this case, when she's now painting on silk. The brushes are all lined up. There's water for cleaning brushes. All of these things are there and ready. And in the days before she starts painting, she's thinking about the series that she's painting and getting a feeling for what that will be and what it will look like. But before she actually paints, she sits down and does nothing. She sits in meditation and clears her mind completely. And then when she begins to paint, there's no process that you see happening in her mind, and I know from her describing this that there's nothing going on up there. It's coming from the heart. And that movement of the brush, if you see, there's a couple of videos on her website of her painting, it's just this effortless kind of Zen calligraphy-like style where there's this freedom of movement without any kind of interpretation, without the ego getting involved, without a filter or interpretation. And it's just amazing to watch. It's a kind of meditation in itself. I think that is really what she calls trans-expressionism is what she does in her art. It's what we do in our music. Before we play a concert, we sit, and we'll often sit on stage for a half an hour, 45 minutes, with our eyes closed. You know, in lotus position, the audience comes in, and it used to be when we first did this, people didn't know quite what to do. Normally, you don't see the performers on stage when you're coming in, and a lot of people were kind of curious, and in the first few concerts we did, we actually had some note cards we handed out and asked people if they would please sit quietly and join us in meditation before we started playing. But now we don't
That's
have
so
to
great.
Do that. We hear people come in. They sit down, and we have a whole room full of people meditating before we play. And when we play, it's so different from my old rock and roll days where, you know, we'd be in front of large audiences and everything's loud and amplified, and you'd play a song, and then everyone applauds and cheers, and, you know, and there's this kind of very excited atmosphere. What we're playing now has a similar intensity and a similar excitement, but there's so little ego involved in it. It's such a pleasure for us, because for a musician, you want to get in touch with that part of you inside that knows how to play already, and you just want to let it come out. And you don't want to be concerned with what is the audience going to think, or you don't want to be concerned with, how do I look, or, is the stage look nice enough, or are the acoustics good enough in the room? You have to set all that up before you play, just like Marley sets up her studio before she paints. But when you begin to paint, when you begin to play, and then I have to say this transfers to every action in the day. Whatever you do during the day is a kind of conscious meditation where you have prepared through whatever means necessary, and then you create that action and you just let it come out of that deeper part of yourself or that higher part of yourself. There really are no good words, or there are perhaps too many words to describe it. We spend so much time describing it that we often get lost in the words themselves. Really, that action is just letting go and doing what you already know how to do. When we play, we sit there and we start playing, and people often don't even open their eyes from that half hour or so of meditation waiting for us to start performing. And often it will be Bastian playing something very atmospheric on the synthesizer. Marlies is playing the tampura, this wonderful drone instrument from the Indian tradition, and I'm playing the sitar, which vibrates so intensely with its 20 strings, of which sitars play actually striking only 7 of them. The other 13 strings only vibrate. And that energy that's created from what I produce from striking one note then goes through the instrument, vibrating all these other strings, in the same way that every action that we perform goes out into the world and has a corresponding vibration with everything else in the world. And in our concerts, people can be relaxed enough to feel that they are psychically and emotionally and on every level you can feel, they are massaged by this sound vibration that comes out of us. And when you look at Marlies' paintings, you see that same thing. She is an abstract painter, and her paintings are, I think, best described as chaotic. But in that chaos, you see that consciousness that comes through in her hand, through the brush, and onto the canvas. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful display. It's it's like a dance to see those strokes from the brush on the canvas. It's an amazing, amazing, effortless performance.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I think everybody is longing for that in their deepest soul, to be the brush in God's hand, to be the instrument in God's hand, and that's what you're talking about. You're talking about tuning in to what is the celestial expression of your art.
Right.
It's just so wonderful, and I thank you for doing that. And I wanted to tell you I got emails about the show, and one person said that Starseed music is my very, very, very favorite music. And so I just wanted to thank you. It is very lovely, and I want to encourage people to tune into your website and hear it and order your CDs. And I just thank you for all the ways that both of you are bringing forth the celestial, the divine, in everything you do, in your interactions with the deer and the websites and the writing and the music and the art. I just thank you with all my heart for being so fully self-expressed and giving your best gifts.
I'm going in 2 days back to California, and then Eva, she knows already that I'm coming, that I'm on my way. The dear Eva, she knows it already.
I'm sure.
You know, when I come in Lake Shastina around the corner, you know, and then maybe 200 yards or what away from my house. Then they know my car, and they come running over the street when I come with my car in the garage. They run over, they hear that, you know, they are so connected, you know, they know exactly when my car is coming.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
I just thank you both with all my heart for being on today. Say one more time how people can reach you.
You can go to any of our websites, and since I'm a web designer, we have several websites that you can go to. Pelorian.com is my main website. That's P-E-L-O-R-I-A-N.com. And from there, you can look at the Deer in the Yard pages. Our music site is starseedmusic.net. That's all one word, Starseed Music. And Marlies's gallery website is starseedgallery.net.
Now, does that actually have the video where Marlies is painting?
Yeah, there's two videos on her website. One is a biography of Marlies that's really, really pretty interesting. A lot of great photographs from
I'm sorry, Russ. I got the signal from Don that we're over time. So I just want to thank you for being here. Tell you I love you with all my heart, and I hope you will come back.
We will. Thank you, Iris.
Thank you.
Thank
we love you.
You,
Iris.
And you. Bye.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep shining until then. Happy trails to you till we meet again. I love you, and this is my wish for you, that all your dreams come true and are 1,000 times more wonderful than you ever dreamed possible. Ah, men, ah, women, ah, children, and yeehaw!